Hi, sexy people. We are in for a steamy treat today. I'm Dr. Tammy, and this is The Trouble with Sex. My guest today, I'm talking with Jaya, the award-winning somatic sexologist and author of Your Blueprint for Pleasure. She's also been a star on Netflix's Sex, Love, and Goop, talking about what drives sexual attraction, passion, and erotic fulfillment. Jaya is also the founder of the Erotic Blueprint Breakthrough. For over three decades, and I can't believe we've never really hung out in person. I find that very surprising. Jaya has been immersed in the study of turn-ons, ancient erotic rituals, tantric sex, the mastery of sensual touch, pure erotic play. You want this person in your life, clearly. Kinky dynamics, the biology and psychology of attraction, and sexual fulfillment. So she works with all kinds of bodies and sexual orientations. And through her own observation and clinical research, and I'm sure her personal experience, she discovered the Erotic Blueprint, which is a map of arousal that reveals your specific erotic language and patterns to help you create a greater path towards your sexual fulfillment. And I've just read the book, and I'm fascinated by this idea of erotic blueprint.
Want to create a more exciting, sexy date night? Whether you've just started dating or are already in a committed relationship, the new Date Night card deck is designed to bring you and your partner to new heights of passion and romantic intimacy. Created by relationship expert Dr. Tammy Nelson, the Date Night card deck includes a variety of sexy and stimulating questions and action cards designed to help you find new ways to communicate and connect. Move your relationship into new realms, and maybe even jumpstart a wild and sexy night. Order your Date Night card deck today on Amazon. Just type Date Night Card Deck Tammy Nelson. That's Date Night Card Deck Tammy Nelson. Create your exciting and sexy date night today.
It all comes down to story. If you're working on a project, whether it's a nonfiction memoir, educational material, or a work of fiction, your ability to engage a reader comes down to telling a compelling story. I'm Douglas Moser, and I've helped writers hone their craft from proposal to finished product. I've coached budding memoirists and talented novelists, helping them find the story and refine their work. With a background in journalism, film, theater, fiction, and nonfiction, I can work with you in any capacity. To learn more, check out my website at douglasmoser.com. That's DouglasMoser.com. And if you mention The Trouble with Sex or Dr. Tammy, I'll give you a 20% discount on all our work.
So welcome, Jaya. I'm so happy to have you here.
I'm so excited to be here. I can't believe we haven't met either, that we've both been at this for like three decades.
I know. You are aging us, but yes, you're absolutely right. And we're sexier than ever. Look at us.
We are. I mean, I feel like I'm having some of the best sex of my life, you know? I've heard this, people saying, like, as I age, sex just gets better. And I think there's some truth to that.
I know. There is truth to that. I just wish I wasn't so tired. It gets better, but I'm more tired. But I think your book, I really, you know, I've read so many books, and so many self-help books, and every book on sex that's ever been written. And so I always go into it with a little modicum of like, okay, this is about work. But I read your book and I was like, oh, this is really personal and very transparent. And I really enjoyed it. I thought it was really well written. I loved when you started off with the chapter about how you were in your own sexless marriage there for a while. And you were like, oh, this is not working for me.
Yeah. How a sexologist ended up in a sexless relationship. I used to joke, I went from like the sex goddess to a freaked out mom having a new baby. And then my partner and I just not being able to figure out, even though I had all the sex tips and all the tools and I'd written all the books, here we are, and I wasn't having sex. And, you know, part of that was the way I was initiating. And I think, I don't know if this is true for you, but I think out of my own pain sometimes comes my greatest teachings, because I'm trying to figure it out myself.
Oh my God, I think that's why I wrote all my books, is to try to figure out my own relationships and my own family and my own sexuality. And you know, my husband is like famous for saying, you know, well, you're the therapist. Like, why are we fighting? Like, I don't understand. But I think, you know, it's like our own, not only our own playground, but our own laboratory that we act out and work through all our own stuff. And I really appreciated how you shared that. And I'm really excited about this book. I think, you know, the erotic blueprints are a really clear way to understand our sexuality. And I'm wondering, what was it that got you from that, okay, I'm in this sort of sexless relationship, to, oh, I figured this out?
So it was actually a moment with a client, and I had been paying attention because I love personality typing systems. I love the Enneagram and the DISC profile and Myers-Briggs, some of these personality typing tests. And it got me thinking about sexuality and who we are and how we're aroused. And it was one day just working with a client who was having trouble getting an erection. And he and his wife were trying all the sexual techniques and nothing was working. And so here we were, and I was hovering my hands over his body, and he started to have these waves of orgasmic energy moving through him. And he got an erection, and she's looking at me like, what is going on? And his eye was open really big, and he's like, what's happening? And that was my first aha moment. Oh, we're all wired differently. These sex techniques are only one aspect, and usually within one standard narrative of what we think sex is. And there's other people who are wired differently. What's interesting in my own life was, so I came up with four of them for the erotic blueprints. And one of them is the one that my partner actually is, and it wasn't until I realized that one came online, and it was number five. And the reason why was I was 0% of this blueprint, which explains some of the struggle that my partner and I were having, because I didn't even have it in my awareness or my lexicon, nor was I seeing clients coming to me, because it wasn't part of what I offered. And so that was just a huge aha. Well, here I am, and I have 0% of this because I'm missing a whole aspect of sexuality, a whole realm of sexuality, which is the realm of what my partner is. And then vice versa, he was 0% of where I was highest. He didn't have that lexicon. And so we were just on completely different pages. Once we figured that out, then it was my willingness to learn and his willingness to do the work and to learn that then brought us back together into a hot, juicy sex life. And that was about, I'd say, like 5 years, 6 years into our relationship. And now we're 16 years into our relationship. So it was a big needle mover and a major thing that turned things around for us.
Yeah. So can you tell us a little bit about each of your erotic languages? How did you sort of come to that language about how to describe how he was different, he or she was different than you?
Mm-hmm. So there's five erotic blueprints. I'll go through them really quickly because I think that'll help elucidate a little here. The first one is an energetic, and that's someone who's turned on by tease, anticipation, space, longing, yearning for the erotic experience. And I don't know if you've ever had that moment where you're like about to kiss someone and there's all that juice and the anticipation, and then you kiss them and it's a little like, that's kind of like what it's like for an energetic. And the superpower is that they can be very orgasmic with very little stimulation. They can go into expanded states of consciousness and explore realms that are unknown to most of the other blueprints on the shadow side, because they are so sensitive they can shut down, turn off if something's coming at them too quickly or it's too much physical sensation. They can dissociate from their body. The next one's the sensual, and that's someone who's turned on by all of their senses being ignited: taste, touch, smell, something delicious in your mouth while someone's kissing your inner thigh. That's very sensual. The superpower is orgasms that don't have to be genital focus. So behind the knee, or kissing behind the ear, or the deliciousness of a food while you're listening to a piece of music can become orgasmic. And so the sensual shadow, though, is getting caught in your head. You get caught in your head and then you can't feel what's happening in between your legs because you're thinking about the to-do list or the bills you forgot to pay, or, you know, is everything okay down there? Those thoughts that start to take you outside of your body. The next is the sexual. The sexual is someone who's turned on by what we think of as sex in our culture. It's a standard narrative of what we think of. Orgasms, penetration, getting to the climax, nudity. The shadow side of the sexual is that they miss this whole journey and they have this very limited definition of sex. And so what I often hear in my practice with them is, there's nothing wrong. We're having orgasms. You know, because like that's the definition of what means successful sex. The next is the kinky, and that's someone who's turned on by what's taboo. And so, and that means whatever's taboo for you. I think oftentimes we think of kink and we go to extremes, which can be part of it, but it's also could be a power play. It could be some kind of impact. So there's a big world here, and I think that's one of their superpowers, is that there's endless creativity because we've created so many things that are taboo about sex, which is fun to explore. The shadow side, however, is a lot of shame. Why am I like this? Why am I turned on by this? Maybe I shouldn't, and I'll hide this from my partner. And that was part of my partner, Ian. I'm a sexologist. This is what I do for a living. And he felt ashamed to come and talk to me about what really turns him on. So part of it also was that his blueprint and his turn on was hidden because of the shadow aspects of his blueprint. Mm. And then the final one is the shapeshifter. And that's someone who's turned on by all of these things. They speak all of the erotic languages. The superpowers that they can shapeshift to really please anyone. However, they're often starving in their shadow because they've been told they're too much. They've cut off parts of themselves. They have an insatiability about them, and therefore they're starving. My theory is that we're all shapeshifters. We've just cut off aspects of ourselves, and that we have this full spectrum sexuality. So most people come to work with us, they end up being shapeshifters at the end of, you know, a year, 6 months, whatever time they've been working, because they start to reintegrate all of these aspects of themselves.
Yeah, I like that. It makes total sense to be sort of in integrity, which is a lot of my work, means to, you know, it's not a moral issue, but to live in that space where you can be all the parts of yourself and say, this is who I am. This is all of me. And I like what you said about, you know, your partner sort of struggling with the shame of, this is what I want, this is who I am, and having to compartmentalize that or split that off is a really painful place to be.
It is. And it was so painful for us because I'd come to bed initiating in the sexual blueprint because that's what I thought men wanted. You know, it's like, oh, I'll touch your genitals. I'll say I want to have sex and do a striptease. And he'd look at me and be like, why are you doing that? It's so obvious. Or he'd feel pressure, you know, to have sex. And then he would initiate in the sensual blueprint, which was to cuddle with me and wait and see what would unfold. And I'm rolling my eyes going, oh, God, he's cuddling again. We're not going to have sex again tonight. Because we were just completely missing each other.
Yeah.
And in our blueprints, I was zero kinky. He was zero sexual. I was 5% sensual and he was 5% energetic. And I'm a sexual energetic and he's a kinky sensual. So, you know, completely flip-flopped. And I think a lot of people will call this a mismatch. But what was so successful for us was the willingness to learn. It was just, okay, I'm going to go learn how to do kink. And he's going to go learn how to do some energetic and heal his belief systems around women and sexuality. Because he thought, oh, if I'm initiating sexually, that I'm imposing my sexuality on a woman. And he had all the good guy stuff. So, you know, we had a lot to unravel. And luckily, it was a really fun journey to unravel all of that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, sometimes I think we are attracted to sort of our sexual other, you know, the parts mm-hmm. of ourself that we've denied in ourselves. We see it in another person. We're like, oh, that's hot. But it's also really hard to sort of, you know, find that in ourselves. You know, we sort of project it onto the other person. And at first, sometimes we're like, I don't really like that because I didn't like it in me. Until we realize, oh, no, maybe I didn't like it in me because I was embarrassed or ashamed or just not in touch with it. And that's why I needed it in someone else.
Right.
But now that I think about it, maybe I do like it.
Yeah. I think part of it is finding that intersection. The bridges that, you know, if it seems like, oh, I'm not kinky, my partner is, let's find those bridges. One of the bridges for Ian and I between our kinky and our sexual was he's like, okay, own my genitals 24/7 and you boss me around and tell me what to do. And I was like, great, because I get to be sexual any time of the day because I owned his genitals and his orgasm. And that was super hot. And help me also reclaim the kinky aspect of myself that I disowned that wasn't okay being bossy.
Mm.
And that was so fun.
So what if couples or people who are exploring their sexuality find that it's not fun? Like, what if they find that their partner is into one thing and they're like, you know, that's really not hot for me?
Yeah, this is where I think it's interesting to get underneath the turn on. So I have a lover who likes more extreme things. And in that, I'm like, I can't do that. Your body can't even physically do that. So what's underneath that turn on? You know,
oh, now what I'm so is curious it? About what those things are. I'm like, what? All kinds of pictures in my head, like what the hell that could be, but okay. Go ahead.
What is it about that you're really into? And maybe it's about achievement. I did some things that, you know, isn't achievable, so I get a reward. Okay, how can we put that into the erotic play? Mm-hmm. Maybe it's about a sensation. I love the sensation of being stretched. Okay, well, how do we then give you that sensation of being stretched and played with in that way? So what's underneath the thing that might be a hard limit for you where you don't find it's fun or you don't want to do it, that is the turn on? And yeah. Can you provide those things that are the underneath?
Yeah, yeah. And that's similar to the work that I've talked about here. Like, I had a couple who his fantasy was to get a sex swing and attach it to the ceiling. And she was like, there's no way in hell we're getting a sex swing and attaching it to my ceiling and ruining my home. But when we talked about what the desire was underneath it, he said, you know, I'm just really worried that I've gotten so heavy and my knees really hurt. And every time we have sex, I'm afraid I'm going to crush you and that I can't have sex the way we used to because my stomach gets in the way and my knees hurt. And I just have this fantasy that if we were suspended, I could do it and I would make you happy. And she was like, oh, that makes so much sense to me. And she's like, why don't we have sex in the pool? And then we could be suspended. And I just thought that was so charming and beautiful because then they sort of understood and empathized with each other.
Mm-hmm.
And it was lovely. Although she was a little worried about the neighbors and what the neighbors would say.
And so lovely. I think that comes down to creativity too. I think we've lost creativity around sexuality of, oh, we hit up against the thing, let's just not do it.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of, how can we get creative? We can think of one thing suspended. Maybe we can think of 10 things suspended. And it becomes where the issue is outside of the relationship, not in between. And you get to get into creative problem solving, which can be fun with sex. Let your imagination go.
Yeah, if you have the energy. And let me throw something else in here and see what you think. Like, what about people who've had trauma, either childhood sexual trauma or
you know, adult trauma. How does that play a role in the work that you do to help people work through figuring out first what their erotic blueprint is and then, you know, pushing into the spaces where they could get creative and they could be curious and also maybe set boundaries for themselves or to lose themselves in the pleasure?
Trauma. I think we just need to begin with how are we defining trauma in a really positive light? Your system adapted and kept you alive and in survival. So the way that I see a trauma is that we adapted, which we needed to do, but the adaptation got stuck. And so this adaptation to an adverse situation that became our norm that we don't necessarily need anymore. So if your nervous system is getting really triggered or you feel unsafe or something becomes overwhelming, it's training the system that a new way is okay and that you're no longer in that unsafe situation that you were in. I come from a background of pretty intense trauma in my life. And there was, you know, a point where I thought I'd never really have sex, even though I had the desire to, because I couldn't stand being touched. Mm-hmm. Just like being touched would be like, oh, too much, or felt like bugs crawling on me, or, you know, just brought up all of the fears and unsafety. And so I, you know, part of my journey has been healing and finding ways to manage the symptomology of CPTSD, which is complex post-traumatic stress disorder. And I did pretty well through my life, but it was always still there. You know, it was always still this thing where even with my partner, Ian, who loves me so much and is so amazing, I would go into, you're the abuser, if he raised his voice just a little bit, or if his beard hit me in a certain way, I'd go into flashbacks, certain smells. And I think it's important for anyone on that journey to go, okay, here are the things that I'm aware of that are triggers or responses where my nervous system gets activated. And how can I work with that? How can I either avoid those triggers or have bits of them so my nervous system can see that I'm safe? I do a lot of vagal stimulation as part of healing with trauma. So cold exposure, I hum every morning and sing every morning, which is so delightful. I love that. There are certain herbs and things that can also help. There are now wearable devices that people can get that help stimulate vagal tone. And that has been a huge game changer for me. Along with, and this could be a little controversial to talk about, but psychedelic therapy has been shown to help people with PTSD. And I think that that was kind of the final nugget of helping me no longer qualify for PTSD. So be gentle with yourself. Go slow, have consent conversations, let people around you know what a trigger looks like so they can help co-regulate you, and look into all the different modalities that are there. Work with a great trauma therapist, no grounding techniques, because there's a lot that you can actually do. Helpless in this journey. And you know, people told me I'd never heal, that I was in the top 1% in terms of the level of trauma that I had experienced. And I'm here to tell you that healing is possible.
Oh, wow. That's amazing. Well, I love what you're saying about, you know, first recognizing your own triggers and understanding where you get your own reactivity. And that self-awareness, I think, is key, and not projecting it onto your partner or other people. And, you know, exploring alternative treatments and things that work for you that are, you know, body connected, and also things that heal your brain and rewire your brain and do memory reconsolidation and, you know, all the refocus all those neural pathways, all those things. We've talked about a lot of those things on this podcast. So I really like what you're sharing. And, you know, I just want to honor you and the
sort of path that you've been on and the work that you're doing to, you know, really show people that there is healing and that there is recovery. I think so many people, particularly our sexy listeners who have been through extreme trauma and somehow don't necessarily see pleasure as the path to healing. And a lot of this podcast is about pleasure can heal trauma.
100%.
Yeah. And it can feel dangerous. And yet for many people, it's the path through. And so I appreciate the sort of unpeeling of what you're talking about and sort of the flowering of your recovery. It's really beautiful.
I love what you just said there, because I think we have a lot of awareness around being trauma-informed therapy, but I think there's a lot of value to being pleasure-informed and how pleasure is a pathway to healing. And for me, that was definitely, for me, sex has actually been the way that I regulate in a lot of instances. And that's not for everybody, but for me, it has been so healing to have a partner to rewire with and to co-regulate with. And that pleasure running through my body, my own agency with that has been so empowering.
I mean, there's so much power in being connected to our pleasure. And I think we're in a time in our culture that is trying so desperately to make us repress that. And so just the remembering, the reintegration of the realization that, you know, power is understanding that we're entitled to our pleasure. And it's not, you know, a sin, or it's not dangerous. It's not about, you know, if you work hard enough, then you'll be entitled to pleasure, like maybe on the weekends, right. Or maybe on vacation, maybe when you retire.
We have a core brand value, pleasure first, which means we put pleasure before anything else. So even before I get on a podcast, I'm doing my pleasure. I have my O vitamin every morning before I get out of bed. It's just part of what we've created as a culture and a lifestyle, that pleasure always comes first.
I love that. I love that. I need to hear that, because I think I work too much, which is why I'm still sick. And because I really love what I do and the people that I work with, I forget that, you know, you can burn out on something pleasurable too.
Relate.
I love work. You got to work some rest into those wonderful, pleasurable work times. And we'll be right back.
Have you started to think about that sexy date night? Well, here's just a sampling of some of the cards. Touch your partner in a way that you'd like to be touched. Or how about this one? Describe a sexual fantasy you would never take into action but have thought about. To get your deck, just go to Amazon and type Date Night Card Deck Tammy Nelson. That's Date Night Card Deck Tammy Nelson. Create your exciting and sexy date night today.
So I'd love to talk to you all day about my sexual blueprints and how do you figure them out and what's the key, but I want people to buy your book. I really think that the erotic blueprint is a measure of how to understand yourself and how to get back in touch with pleasure, which is what we've been talking about today. And so I wanted to ask you, what do you think is the biggest trouble with sex today?
I think the biggest trouble with sex today is that we've lost intentionality around sex and consciousness around sexuality. And then because of that, we suppress. And when we suppress a natural human desire, it has to come out sideways. And so we get a lot of shadow around sexuality. And just like music and substances and so many things in life, sex has become recreational. And there's nothing wrong with recreational experience, but my invitation is to make it recreational. Which means that we are putting intention back into it. We're putting awareness back into sex and the sacredness back into sexuality, which I think we're missing as a culture, which leads us to shadow.
Oh, I would love to have you back on and just talk about the sacredness of sex and how to reinforce that. That's such a big topic. It's so important.
So important.
Yeah, it's so important. It's hard when you have, you know, busy lives and you're just having sort of maintenance rollover sex on Tuesdays just to make sure you squeeze it in and to, you know, to find the time and the purpose to be intentional, to add in that sacred part. It's so, you know, it's crucial, but it's tough when people have busy lives or kids or jobs or dogs or whatever people have. It kind of interferes.
Yeah, and I also think that we could just start with something simple, like let's take a breath and dedicate our pleasure to the well-being of the world today. Like just things so simple like that
can
shift the sexual experience.
No, I think that's lovely. Well, let's dedicate this podcast to the well-being of the world and send out that healing energy. And I want to take a question from a listener. I have a question from Paulo from Miami. Paulo says, I love the idea that we can find passion with people who have different desires than us, but we've all been conditioned to think love and sex should feel and be easier with the right person. How can I trust that if I put in the work, it will be worth it? And how can I convince or make it fun for my partner to actually do the work? Boy, that's a complex question, Paulo, but thank you so much.
Very complex question.
What are your thoughts off the top of your head, besides buy my book and buy all Tammy's books and definitely buy the Erotic Blueprint book?
Well, I think there's this interesting statement that really stood out for me there, which is, oh, if I find the right person, that it's all going to click into place.
Yeah.
I think that's a myth. You know, we can have amazing love and a great relationship outside the bedroom with the most beautiful person. And who's to say what's right or wrong? I think that, you know, if you're in a healthy relationship and you're in love, then it doesn't necessarily mean that things are going to click. I see this all the time in practice. I'm sure you do too. We love each other so much. We have this great relationship outside the bedroom, but things aren't clicking inside the bedroom. I think we need to look at a lot of these belief systems like, oh, everything's supposed to work out all the time, 100%. I don't think life works like that. One of you is going to get sick. One of you is going to have a really stressful time in your relationship. Kids are going to happen. You're going to age. Menopause is going to happen. You know, there's just so many things in life that are unpredictable. And I think the best way for all of us to go about it is to be in acceptance of what is. Because suffering is saying, I'm with the right person. This should be different than it is. As opposed to, I'm with somebody I really love. And I'd love our sex life to look different. So what could we do together? What would be fun for you? What would be exciting for us to explore? Because sexuality is going to change. And so one of my favorite exercises, and I have these exercises in the books, are dyads to really find, because we can make guesswork. I could give you advice on what would make it easy and fun for your partner, but I have no idea. I don't know your partner. So the best way really is for you to find out. And that's to sit down and just prompt them with the same prompt over and over again to really get to the gold of what would be fun for them. So the way that this works is you sit down, maybe make some eye contact or hold hands, take a couple of breaths together. And it's a simple prompt of, tell me something that would be fun and exciting for us to explore together about sex. See what they say. And if you understand them, you don't have to agree with them. I think that's the important part about this exercise is you don't have to agree with them, but to say thank you when you understand them and then prompt again. Tell me something you want to explore that would be fun and exciting for you about sex. You do the same prompt and you would do that for like 20 to 40 minutes. You could go back and forth with each other. So you're each sharing something that would be exciting. And then I'd take that list and circle the things that are both exciting for both of you. And there you have it. Now you have what will be fun and exciting to explore when it comes to sex.
That's a great one. A great one. And I appreciate that. And I appreciate what Paulo is asking about relationships. And the thing that stood out for me was, I think they said like three times about work. Well, what if we don't want to work on it? What if my partner doesn't want to work as hard as I do? Or what if, you know, what if the way we work isn't working? Or I think it goes back to what we were saying before about like this idea of work. Like we only are going to have pleasure if we both work on it. And that relationships are quote unquote work. And you're kind of saying the opposite. You know, where is the pleasure in your relationship? Where is it fun? Where can you appreciate what you have? And, you know, I think appreciation is the sort of, you know, magic of the universe, that you always get more of what you appreciate. So instead of focusing on where we need quote unquote work, you know, where is it already working? Where do you already appreciate what's happening? Where is it already pleasurable? And can you expand on that? Instead of focusing on what's not working, because, you know, most people come into therapy together and say, this is what's not working. This is what my partner's not giving me. This is what we're not getting enough of. And that just reinforces your misery. So you're saying, you know, to expand on what would be fun and exciting, what can we do that we like that we want more of? And that's really where the sort of the spark is. And so I like what you're saying. Jaya, what else do you really want our listeners to know about erotic blueprints? What's it important for them to understand about this psychology of attraction and sexual fulfillment between these types? As an ENFP or an ENFJ, I'm not sure, I'm kind of on the cusp. I love the idea of types too. I think it's fascinating.
Yeah, INFP over here. Sometimes on the cusp of E. Yeah, what I think is important around the blueprints, one is you're not doomed if you have different blueprints. This is something that I think a lot of people think, like, oh, my partner's different than me. I'm doomed. We're incompatible. And they start to make up those stories that this is going to take a lot of work. So you're not doomed. It can be fun. Every blueprint pairing has superpowers together. And they also have things that are the shadow aspects, the things that can be inhibitors as you're working together. So I think it's important just to know you're not doomed no matter what your pairing is. But if you have willingness to learn skills, to play, to get curious, that willingness is the key to success. As soon as there's an unwillingness or resistance, that can be where the challenge lies. And then I also think that the blueprints are a really good starting place for that sexual exploration. And it is an exploration. You're not doing it right or wrong. It's all just information. You know, you can have one lover and do something. They're out of their mind, orgasmic. And then you do the same thing with your current lover. And they're like, what are you doing? And that's just because we have these different blueprints. And it's nothing you're doing wrong or right. It's all just information about your partner's body, and it's in the curiosity and in the exploration that you discover the person that you're actually with. Whether you've been with them for 5 years or 20 or 40, there's always something to discover.
I like that. I like that ongoing curiosity. And can you change your blueprint over time? Like you said, you expanded because of your partner and you learned more things about yourself. But does your blueprint ever totally change from one thing to another?
Yeah. I mean, I was talking about menopause. I've seen that. Like, oh, I'm super sexual. And then all of a sudden, I'm more sensual because of the way that hormones and chemistry are affecting things, or getting with a new partner sometimes can affect things. So yes, they do change. But here's a little key secret, which is once you know your blueprints, then all you have to do is learn how to feed them so that you're actually fed in your blueprint. Learn how to speak it so that you can speak that language to anybody else, like speaking your partner's blueprint. So that's not just the words you use, but it's the touches. It's the body language that you're using when you're with them. it's healing the shadow aspects of the blueprint and going through that process, like my partner needing to heal the shadow aspects of the sexual blueprint and his masculinity and what it meant to fully develop as a sexual man in the world and with me and having that permission. So that was part of his journey. And then the last piece is expanding. And this is where you now have turn on in your partner's blueprint or in a blueprint you didn't have vocabulary in. So now I have turn on in Kiki, whereas before I had zero. And eventually what starts to happen is you become whole. All the pieces that you've cut off now move into wholeness and you are a shapeshifter, which then no matter what's happening in your life, right now I'm going through menopause and boy, you know, like all of a sudden I'm like, what's wrong with me? And my partner was the one who said, you know, it's just interesting. Your blueprint changed. Whereas before you were so sexual and now there's nothing wrong with you. You just have expression and eroticism in the energetic and the sensual and the kinky more than you did in the sexual blueprint. I was like, thank God for my own framework. I was walking around going, I'm dead. I feel sexually dead. And he's like, no, it's just your sexual blueprint right now isn't very active because you're having your body change and your biochemistry change. And I'm sure that will come back if, you know, I want to go play there more consciously, start to develop it. But I'm actually enjoying my sexual being a little lower and having more of this energetic sensual coming forward. It's rather delicious.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love that. And good luck with your menopause.
Thank you.
as someone who's on the other side, it's wonderful to not have to worry about all those symptoms anymore. So it does pass. And it's great. And hormone replacement is great too.
Yes.
Is there anything else that you would like to let our listeners know about as far as what, how to reach you, how to find you, how to contact you, what you want to offer them? What if they want more Jaya? Where do they go?
The book is a great place to start. Your Blueprint for Pleasure, which is a mouthful that I've had to say a lot of times. But also go take the quiz. You can go to eroticbreakthrough.com. I'm sure you'll also put a link in the notes somewhere. But to go take the quiz, find out who you are. I think we've had over 3 million people now take the quiz, which is quite extraordinary. Wow. And I love getting the letters from people who say like, wow, I took this quiz and now it all makes sense. You know, now my relationship makes sense. Or this past relationship that didn't work out makes sense. I just love receiving that and how the impact that it's had. So, and we have online courses and all the fun things, but if you go take the quiz, you'll get involved in our community.
That's great. I can see like a whole dating site where you put in your type. And it's great.
People are using them on some of the dating apps. Every now and then I'll see like my erotic blueprint is XYZ. And I'm like, that's such a great way to weed out people. Like if they know their blueprint, you know your blueprint, you know it's someone else who's on a sexual adventure too.
Absolutely. Absolutely. We're going to have to integrate that somehow. Well, I could talk to you all day, but thank you, Jaya. We'd have to have you back to talk more about sacred sex and all the other things that we sort of touched on a little bit today. And I want to tell all my sexy listeners, if you want more of Jaya, go to youreroticbreakthrough.com to take the quiz to find out your erotic blueprint. And check out the show notes. We'll have all of her information in there about the book, how to find the book, and how to find more of Jaya. So thank you very much for being a guest today.
Thank you so much.
And thank you.
Such a pleasure.
Oh, it was my pleasure. Definitely. Thank you to all my sexy listeners. This has been another episode of The Trouble with Sex. I'm Dr. Tammy. Stay sexy and have fun. Have a question about your relationship or sexual wellness? Visit thetroublewithsex.com and click on Ask Dr. Tammy to send us your questions. For sex positive tips, live events, and updates, join our mailing list and follow us on Instagram at The Trouble with Sex. Listen to episodes of The Trouble with Sex on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. Please share and rate the show. We so appreciate and thank you for supporting us.
The Trouble with Sex is produced by Brandy Savick. Audio for this episode was designed by Bethany Knoll Production. This episode was engineered and mixed by Bruce Hirschfield. Music by Bruce Hirschfield.